Welcome once again, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with J.J. Cooper, I'm John Manuel. Hope you guys had a great weekend. I think we did here in North Cackalack. And we love doing, J.J., our segment every Saturday, 125 Eastern on XM Radio. I thought it was your turn this weekend.
I thought it was too, but they called me.
Saturday. And
I was waiting by the phone.
The host always, I think the host at different times of the year has asked, it's a little slower time for you guys this time of year with the draft deadline passed? Like, no. No, we were working Saturday morning on the Olympics. JJ working more than I was as we covered the Olympics from afar.
I actually got the reverse question on Sunday from a friend of mine and said, so now with the playoffs coming up, is it going to get busier for you? And it's like, no, actually, the Major League playoffs is not the busy thing for us. We got books coming up.
This
That'll
is almost
busy.
One of the slower times because we're gearing up for prospect season, but you can do it a little bit more at our own pace with the daily grind of the minor league season winding down. We'll have our first minor league playoffs this week, which is exciting. We're located in Durham, North Carolina, as many of you know, and we'll have international league playoffs here, it looks like. Durham Bulls magic
limping
number is
across
2.
The
Carolina Mudcats also down the new I-540 Expressway. They're going to have playoffs, so play more baseball in our area, but we thought we'd talk about some consequential baseball. We could talk a little pennant races if we wanted to, but we'll probably end up talking a lot more about the Olympics, which were decided this weekend. Obviously, there's so much going into the baseball discussion of the Olympics. JJ, this was the final Olympic tournament for baseball. Baseball's been removed from the Olympic program, as they like to say, for sure for 2012. Could be back in 2016. That vote is not till, I believe, the fall of 2009.
Although Jacques Rogge this weekend not making it sound real good.
That's how I wanted to start off, was Jacques Rogge actually went to a game. First off, he went to a baseball game, sat next to Harvey Schiller, the Dr. Harvey Schiller, the head of the International Baseball Federation. And, boy, really, you know, it really, like you said, Jacques Rogge really made it sound like it's either major leaguers or nothing for the Olympics. And that's a whole philosophical point that probably could take the whole podcast. But let's start there before we get to the huge
actual
stories
action, yeah,
on the field, which there were great stories. South Korea going undefeated, winning the gold. Team USA having, I think, a solid showing. They lost 3 games, twice to Cuba, once to Korea, 2 of them extra inning games, or 1-1 games, I'm sorry, last at-bat games with the round-robin losses, and then just getting pummeled by Cuba in the semifinal, but rallying to beat Japan to win bronze. I think Team USA acquitted itself fairly well, but we'll get into that later. But let's the subject of the Olympics, baseball in the Olympics. First off, I guess, JJ, just flat out, do you think baseball should be in the Olympics? Not whether it's good, bad, just taking all the factors in, whether it's good for baseball, bad for baseball, whatever. Baseball in the Olympics, at all costs, like, do whatever you have to do to get in. Where does it fall for you?
I don't think so. I don't think, I mean, with what the IOC wants to have baseball in the Olympics, I just say, you know what? Baseball was fine for 100 years not being in the Olympics before 1984, before it ever, you know, I guess it appeared one time, I think, as an exhibition before. But,
yeah, there were several exhibitions before,
But basically didn't appear as a medal sport until over 100 years after baseball had started,
right,
and was fine without it. And now with the World Baseball Classic, which there's no one can argue that the World Baseball Classic is a much more accurate test of what is the best, which team is, you know, which country is playing the best baseball at that moment.
Yeah, it's. I mean, there's certainly tweaks to the World Baseball Classic. They've only had one of them. But the one World Baseball Classic was, I think, a better event than any of the Olympic tournaments that have been held in terms of quality of play.
Well, for one thing, to put it bluntly, the Olympics, Venezuela, Dominican Republic,
correct,
those teams never play in them.
To have an international baseball competition where you're trying to say, here are the best baseball countries, and the Dominican and Venezuela are never represented,
they're not,
is foolish.
You know, Italy may, you know, nothing against Italy, nothing against the Netherlands, nothing against, but there are every Olympics, there are countries who, when you talk about baseball tradition, don't compare in any way to those.
If this year's Olympics actually had the strongest Olympic tournament field. You had 6 legitimate baseball countries, a 7th in the Netherlands that, okay, if you're going to have any European country, you want to have the Netherlands. But this was the weakest Netherlands team that I'd seen.
Right.
By far the weakest Dutch team I've seen in international play. Just 3 years ago in 2005, the Dutch, I think, finished 4th, or maybe they finished 2nd at the World Cup that was held in the Netherlands in 2005. The U.S. finished 8th in that tournament. They barely made the medal round, and then Brian Bannister got lit up by Cuba. But that, just 3 years later, the Dutch team was much weaker, And it's just the way that their hitting has evolved or not evolved.
Devolved.
They had some pretty bad hitters on this team who were playing every day, and they scored. We said that going in, they scored 9 runs in their 7 games. It was brutal. But I agree with you.
And the thing about it is that
the World Baseball Classic greater than Olympics,
right,
in terms of quality of play.
And with it, I don't know anywhere I put it. I mean, I've been hammering on, you know, IBAF, and I hate to keep hammering on them. But the reality of it is that you also have in the World Baseball Classic, not that Major League Baseball by any stretch is this perfect entity that, you
right,
know, that everything they touch turns to gold. But it's hard when you're watching the Olympics baseball to not get the feeling over and over that there are people involved in this who have never really even seemingly been to a baseball game and understand the concept of it.
Yeah, I think I think the difference is maybe the way to put that is, because I'm sure they have.
Right.
But I think that when it comes to IBAF versus MLB, no matter what negatives MLB has associated with it, it's certainly, like you said, it's not perfect. But in general, Major League Baseball needs a great product on the field and does everything it can to have a good product on the field. And there's a lot of meritocracy involved. There's a ton of politics in MLB, but eventually it's a meritocracy. Who's going to win and who's not going to win on the field? That gets decided on the field, and MLB, the central agency, usually gets out of the way of things to let teams settle things on the field. And that's not what happens in international sports of any kind. There's a lot more taint with international sports and a lot more politics in all international sports, and that's certainly the case in baseball when you have the IBAF, which has generally been controlled, I think, by everybody but Americans. And, hey, you know, Americans don't have any monopoly on what's best for baseball, but it had a lot of Europeans in charge of the International Baseball Federation, which used to be based in Switzerland. None of that makes any sense. When I first started working at Baseball America, and this just changed in the last year, the International Baseball Federation's website was baseball.ch. .ch is for Switzerland.
And that,
I mean, that just made no sense at all.
And it was run like the president of
Aldo Notari, the late Aldo Notari, an Italian. And I think that's actually why baseball got voted out, because the people who ran IBAF didn't know that baseball was on thin ice when Jacques Roga took over as head of the IOC. Juan Antonio Samaranch, the previous IOC president, was actually a baseball kind of guy. He liked having baseball in the Olympics. He was one of the guys who really helped get baseball in the Olympics. And Jacques Roga is not. Jacques Roga is a rugby guy. His wife is a golf advocate and a golf coach and a golfer. And what did they try to do? They got rid of baseball and softball and tried to put in rugby and golf. That's the politics we're
right,
talking about.
And that's the
MLB
politics.
Has that, none of that involved in the World Baseball Classic.
And when it comes to it, like, when you compare the umpiring.
Yeah, I said none of that involved. I should say less of that involved.
Right, but when you compare the umpiring.
Here's where it can be involved.
Right. The umpiring, I think, you know, generally, thankfully, there wasn't a whole lot of examples of where it was, you know, it really caused problems.
Right.
But you saw, like, umpiring that was below par for what you would.
International umpiring is terrible.
And,
I mean, Major League umpiring has its flaws. We just had a 3-pitch walk and a 5-pitch walk this weekend in Major League Baseball. But in international play, it's worse.
And that's something where if you, and it's the same way, like, if you took a Class A umpire and threw him in the big leagues, the reality of it is that you are overmatched, because when you are talking about elite level talent,
right,
like when you're talking balls and strikes, that's a problem, because
yeah,
you're not used to seeing a curveball that, you know, breaks as much. You're not
yeah,
used to, you know, all that. But even just simple things, and like these were the things that just annoyed me throughout it. Like you'd see, I saw, you know, an example like this. Okay, and maybe they went back and changed it, but Mike Hespin fields the ball. He throws it into the ground 2 feet in front of the first baseman. First baseman doesn't glove it. And they call for, you know, error on Matt Brown.
Huh.
And it's like, no, that's not, you know. And this, I actually agreed with this, but you never see this, but how official baseball scoring works. There was an error called on Alexi Bell where he never touched the ball.
Yeah, the right fielder, he just missed the ball.
And
for QB.
I wish that's how, you know, it was a score, but
right,
having been, you
although
know.
Although in the rule book, it said you can't score like that.
Right.
So.
That's the thing. Is that, but you have people doing this who just are, it's, again, I'm not trying to hammer this point too hard, but
because that's the thing, I there might have been Jake Failing or some of the people from IBAF who are American might have actually been technical people. They might have been the official scorers,
right,
there.
I don't.
So I'm not sure,
but
you, the point is overall that it's just not a level of quality that is associated with Major League Baseball.
And you see that it's the reality
on
is
a lot
it's,
of levels.
It's an afterthought. I mean, when you go beyond everything else, as far as the Olympics, it was an afterthought in the Olympics. I don't fault them for that. Baseball's not this big draw where they're going to have 40,000 people show up in Beijing to watch
yeah,
it. However,
they had good crowds in the medal round.
Right. But the ballparks, as they've, you know, as pointed out a couple places, basically were bleachers thrown up that, you know, probably today, you know, the baseball stadium is being dismantled. And,
correct.
You know, and
yeah, that was something that came across in many articles, is that it was a very temporary facility. I'm sure the field was in fine shape because Murray Cook, MLB, right, was over there, and MLB made sure of it. To me, getting back to the first question, which is baseball in the Olympics and its place, to me, the only way I think baseball should stay in the Olympics is on the same lines as soccer. I think soccer is an instructive model. And I don't even think MLB or Japan or the Cubans would necessarily even go for this. But football, soccer, at the Olympic level is a 23 and under tournament. But FIFA strictly enforces that if you have a professional player who the national team selects, like Brazil, Ronaldinho, his professional team has to yield Ronaldinho if they have games. He's going to the Olympics, period.
But one other key point with that. Actually, in Ronaldinho's case, I think they actually want him to go because he's rehabbing an injury and they want him to get him to competition. There's also the three-player exception to the under-23 rule.
Right, that's
which
right.
Which is, so you essentially have a team, you know, of these younger players, but then, and this is where, you know, this is where I think their baseball would always have a severe problem with it, is that in addition, they work a way to get a couple of other older stars on each team so that the guys that, you know, that people are going to show up to watch.
I don't think that's a problem. I think if MLB, though, wants to – basically, if MLB wants to grow the game internationally by using – with its own funding, where the MLB funds it all by itself, it's going to expand the World Baseball Classic and do it that way. If they want to expand the game globally with some other help financially – they're going to compromise with the IOC. And I think the only compromise that's workable for MLB is the soccer model, because you can go to the IOC and say, look, we're like soccer. We have our own international tournament. We also are – we're a big deal without you.
Right.
And so that's how soccer negotiated 23 and under. The Olympics needed soccer, they felt. So if the Olympics want to have baseball and want to have big leaguers, the only way is a compromise. Do I think IOC and MLB will reach that compromise? No, I really don't. I don't buy it. I don't see it happening.
And I don't see how they could get a star, a big league star, to play in it.
If MLB makes that compromise and really is committed to growing, then they can do it. Will the clubs agree to that? I don't know. But I'm just saying, if they want to, that's the compromise, JJ. I think it's plausible. I don't see. There's absolutely no way they're going to ever stop the season. And I like the under 23 plan better than the plan that the Harvey Schiller has advanced, which is like, okay, if we cross our fingers and get lucky and have the Olympics in 2016 in Chicago, then we can have a one-week Olympic break. We'll play the first round, the round robin, with a team of minor leaguers, and then the medal round with a team of big leaguers, if we make it to the medal round. I mean, that's just a ridiculous proposal. That's a sham. That's a Travis Shamockery of a proposal, because you're having a tournament with one team playing one round, another team playing another round. That doesn't make any sense. I think that the soccer compromise, the soccer model, is the only one that's workable. And even then, it would take a lot. It's a stretch for MLB to go that way. But I do think it really is a decision of what MLB, what their goal is internationally. And if their goal is to go for broke and try to be as global a sport as they possibly can, I think that's the only way they can do it. Because I think that's a compromise where the IOC gets some of what they want and MLB gets some of what it wants, which is a less of a disruption of the integrity of pennant races every 4 years. I really think that compromise actually is workable and it would be doable. And I think under that, I would want baseball in the Olympics. Stopping a season or having the Schiller plan, which is like major leaguers for a week in the medal round, that kind of thing, I don't buy that. I don't like any of those plans. I would either, if baseball could be kept in the current format, I'd be fine with that. I think baseball in the current format is okay in the Olympics. I could live with it. I could live without it. But I really think the only way, the only compromise that I would go forward with is the soccer model. And maybe you have fewer exemptions. Maybe it's 23 and under, period, and there are no exemptions. But you would have some of these young big leaguers who would go. But if it's the same rules everywhere, you'd still have had Yu Darvish. You'd probably have Justin Upton, players like that, who would go to the Olympics. And honestly, I think that would be an interesting tournament, and maybe it would be worth it to take a player like that out of the U.S. for a couple weeks to go to the Olympics. I don't have a problem with that.
That's where, as a Major League Baseball fan who thinks that
2 weeks out of 4 years you can't do that?
No. And here's my,
all right, I can.
I'd say no, and the reason I say that is, okay, say that you take a player, say Evan Longoria.
Yeah.
Say you take Evan Longoria. No, he got hurt, you know, here. But
right,
say you take him out for 2 weeks on the Rays. And say when the season's over, and we're not even going to go for, you know, go to the point of, say he gets beaned while he's over there. And
right,
you know,
right.
But,
like Matt LaPorta did.
Right. But say that he goes over there for 2 weeks, and then when the season's over, you know, basically the Rays end up a game out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think the Major League Baseball pennant race is more important than the Olympics.
I don't disagree, but in most cases. But I think that I don't think – I guess I think it's more important – the pennant race is more important than the Olympics most of the time. I think if you want the game to grow internationally and you want the Olympics to help pay for that growth, then you have to make that compromise. So I guess I'm willing – if the Olympics is going to pick up a lot of that tab, I'm willing to make that compromise. And if I'm MLB and I think there are billions of dollars out there for me in China or India or these future international markets, and not just money but future talent, then I'm willing to make that compromise. I think that's the decision that Bud Selig and Bob Dupay and Don Fear, the union, they have to make. But I really think the Shiller plan doesn't make any sense. But, I will say Paul Seiler of USA Baseball pointed out to me many times the soccer model. I'm not sure that's the one that Paul favors, but I think that's the closest parallel. Baseball, and not just MLB, but in Japan as well, and in Cuba, baseball is bigger outside of the Olympics. It exists big time outside the Olympics. The rest of the time in soccer is very similar, and that's not the case for swimming or track and field or gymnastics or so many of those other quote-unquote Olympic sports.
It is, they want to get golf in.
Basketball is completely different.
But they want to get golf in.
Golf in the Olympics is 100% Jacques Rogge's personal preference.
Right. But the reality is that when it comes down to it is that, and, you know, they want to get golf in instead of baseball. Golf's the same way as baseball, the same way as soccer.
Yeah, correct.
It's like, you know, no one's going to go, well, I didn't get to go to the Masters, but I won a gold in the Olympics.
Yeah, exactly. Rugby's also kind of along those same lines. Rugby has a giant World Cup.
Oh,
and here's
huge.
The thing. Rugby is basically a UK Commonwealth sport. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I mean,
outside the Commonwealth?
You make the argument with baseball that it's, you know, that basically baseball, there's really are. I mean, you hit it. There's, if you say six, you could say seven.
But see, it's not correct, though, because I'd say Panama's a baseball country.
Well, sorry.
The Dominican's a baseball country.
Sorry,
Venezuela's a baseball country.
Countries that actually would potentially send, like, we're talking about those countries, they will not even get a team together.
Right. Yeah, MLB would basically have to organize a Dominican team. And here's we're talking about how great the World Baseball Classic is. You have Venezuelan players already saying they won't go play for Venezuela in 2009 because of A, Luis Soho being the manager again and no one asked them. B, the Venezuelan government and I guess the committee did not take care of the players. They had Burger King post-game meals. I mean, that was just hilarious.
You can't do that with big leaguers. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, you probably can with Carlos Zambrano and Henry Blanco, but I think Johan Santana is watching his weight.
Yeah,
so
stop.
That's right.
Blanco
apparently is star at Burger King.
We had to do our little Batgirl,
Batgirl
shout-out
there. Why not? But it's a Baseball America podcast. John Manuel and J.J. Cooper waxing eloquent about the Olympics. Let's talk about the on-the-field. The actual events that happen on the field. Let's start off with your medalists. We'll start at the top. South Korea, JJ, just a huge shock for South Korea. Not only to win the gold, that's shocking enough, but to go undefeated in the entire event.
There's no debate that they were the best team. You can't debate it.
You can't debate it. And the thing is, they played Cuba twice in Korea in a warm-up tournament. So they've ended up playing Cuba four times. They beat them three times. Two games that didn't really matter, and two games that did, and they beat them both times. And Taehyung Chung, the closer, gets the this is a perfect – he comes in, bases loaded, one out, and his catcher's just been thrown out of the game. So new battery completely with one out, bases loaded, gold medal game, Cuba batting in the bottom of the ninth. And Taehyung Chung
– no tough situation.
And you're facing the one Cuban player that most Americans know, Yulieski Gurriel, even though, frankly, Gurriel probably is their fourth best hitter.
You know, I mean, yeah, it's something where at least if you're watching
we've been.
I'd rather have Alexi Bell.
We've been a little part of the overhyping of Gurriel. In 2006, we were right on point. He was their top player, but since then, this guy hasn't progressed. And we put him on the cover of our Olympic preview this year, not as the only picture, but one of the images, basically because that was the best picture we had of a Cuban player, and we didn't have anything good of Alexi Bell.
We don't get a whole lot of art out of Cuba, let me make it clear.
If you look in our preview, we wrote that Gurriel's star was fading a bit, and that Alexi Bell and Alfredo Despaigne were their top hitters, and that was proven true in the Olympics, especially with Alexi Bell, who was the base of the tournament's MVP, but he was our best player. of the event. But so Gurriel's up there against Taehyung Chang, and Taehyung Chang goes strike one, strike two, 71-mile-an-hour change piece from down low, roll over ground ball, and not an artfully turned double play, but an effectively turned 6-4-3 by Korea.
When they're recalling that 10 years from now, telling the story of winning the gold, it'll be the most beautiful double play ever turned.
And here's the fortunate thing for me is, I'll be completely honest, I think there were 7 Kims and 6 Lees on the Korean team. I have a very difficult time keeping track of Korean players. There are no two ways about it. I get mixed up with the names. I guess there's a cultural barrier for me. But the fact that 13 players have the two last names makes it very difficult for me to keep up with their players compared to players internationally for other countries. But Lee Sung Yap, we all know, he's the best hitter Korea's ever produced.
Oh, yeah.
He hit 54 home runs in a season in Korea, which was the record there.
54, then 56.
And 56. I'm 54 and then 56. Then he's had successful seasons in Japan.
3 seasons
for the Occult
over 30
Swallows.
Home runs.
He's had a terrible season this year, not for the Occult Swallows. He played for the
Yomiuri
Giants in Tokyo. But he's had a terrible big league season there with Yomiuri. One home run. He's been sent to the minor leagues. He was having a terrible Olympic tournament. But then in the medal round, Toolsy McClutch would be proud. I guess Lee Sung Yap is Korean for Toolsy McClutch. Home run against Japan, hated rival Japan in the semifinal to break a tie.
As they came back from behind to beat
Japan.
They
were down 2-0, ended up winning 6-2. And then has the go-ahead home run in the gold medal game as well as Korea wins. I guess he runs 1 and 2. He accounted for Korea gets the go-ahead run to
the double in the early innings still.
Yeah. Right, for their third and decisive run. And then the other player I really know on Korea is Taehyung Chang. And why do I know Taehyung Chang? Because I got to see him in person in 2000 in Sydney. He was the only amateur on Korea's team in 2000. And I've talked about this guy for 8 years. Two of the best games I ever saw in my life were U.S.-Korea in 2000. The first game in the round robin was a nothing-nothing game for 8 innings, thanks to Taehyung Chang, who dealt for 7 innings. Submarine, Team USA wanted no part of him, could not hit him. In the bottom of the 8th inning, Doug Minkiewicz grand slam on a 3-2 pitch when he didn't even swing the first 5 pitches, 6-pitch grand slam. U.S. wins that game, and Taehyung Chang matches up again in the semifinal. Both games, it was Taehyung Chang versus Roy Oswalt, and neither one got a decision in either game. And in the second game, in the semifinal, the U.S. was lucky that Korea took Taehyung Chang out in the 7th inning, after 6 and a third innings, and the U.S. finally ties the game off the bullpen and wins on a walk-off Minkiewicz homer in the bottom of the 9th. Those were just two amazing, amazing games. And then Taehyung Chang pitched and was closing for Korea on their undefeated run through the World Baseball Classic. When they got to the semifinals, they lost only in the medal round in the World Baseball Classic. This time, Korea does the same thing, gets to undefeated in the round robin, but gets to the medal round and is able to close the deal this time. And Taehyung Chang gets the save in the gold medal game for HJU, the left-handed pitcher who I've emailed with a scout. He thinks that HJU, he's overweight. He's not in the greatest shape, and that's why he lost control of the strike zone in the 9th inning. Well, I got to admit, I'm watching it today. I thought those pitches were balls. I don't think he got squeezed that bad, JJ. That angle was not
I thought there was one
close.
That was potentially, but the one that was over the middle plate and just maybe a tick above belt high, I thought was squeezed.
I didn't see one of those, but that's just maybe that's me. The angle was terrible
for
the camera work. They were about 20 feet to the right of the pitcher's mound, so it's pretty hard to see.
Again, I won't rail too much, but there are angles that you should have for, baseball and shooting.
NBCOlympics.com, their camera people.
Well, what their camera people? It's the official IOC feed.
Well, that IOC feed was terrible. It was clearly broadcast by people who are not familiar with broadcasting baseball. So that's another part of baseball in the Olympics. But anyway, HJU pitches brilliantly. And this is, again, a scout I talked to who says, get this guy in shape. Consider he's 21 years old. Consider him a college left-hander. He's a first-round pick. He's up to 93 miles an hour. It's a very good breaking ball and a very good changeup.
Changeup was out. Yeah,
and he's left-handed. He's got a big pro body. Just needs to get in a little bit better shape.
And he's also, that was, I think, was the eye-opening thing about this tournament. Maybe we've kind of tried to follow the KBO as much as we can, and but it's always been kind of it's there's no other way to put it. You've got the three Asian leagues. The Japan leagues are the cream of the crop.
Yeah, it's in between basically AAA and the major leagues for me.
And then Taiwan is basically home of the league. This seems like has a gambling scandal about every other year.
That's right.
No other way to put it. But
the Korean League is kind of in the middle.
The Korean League is basically, but it's really kind of always seems like it's the general gist of it has been that if you're really good in Korean baseball, you'll move up to Japan.
It's 2.5A for me. It's like double A. It's in between double A and triple A.
But what we saw at this tournament was, you know, they've got pitching that is not 2.5, you know, A pitching.
Absolutely.
And basically what you saw, I mean.
Well, but, but their best pitcher, though, but I think it is 2.5A pitching because their best pitcher is a guy who the, you know, is a 21-year-old who the scout I'm emailing with says would be a first-round pick in the draft this year, and that's David Price was last year's first overall pick, and he's barely in AAA, and he's struggling.
Right.
I think we're underestimating AAA play when we talk about it.
That may be true. That, I'm saying, but this
I think American
guy,
AAA is pretty doggone good.
No, it is very good.
I mean, pretty good quality of play.
It's bronze medal caliber.
I just saw, that's right. I just saw Ross Ohlendorf yesterday. It was 95 miles an hour in the eighth inning, and he's gotten hammered twice in the big leagues, and he was pretty doggone good in this AAA game I watched yesterday. It's the Baseball America podcast. John Manuel and J.J. Cooper arguing how good Korean Baseball Association or organization baseball is. The point is it's pretty good. They just won a gold medal. And I would argue that Taehyung Chong, who's about 27 years old, 28 years old, this guy could sign right now and go help a big league bullpen.
Oh,
he was outstanding. And 7 strikeouts and 4 innings, 2 saves, and a game-ending double play with a gold medal on the line against Ulysses Gurriel, strike one, strike two, roll over ground ball, double play.
Worst,
I mean, you can't get better than that.
At the worst, he's a setup man who's death on right-handers.
Absolutely, and there are a lot of teams that could use that guy, like the Minnesota Twins or like the Los Angeles Dodgers with Broxton having to close right now. The New York Mets could absolutely use that guy. And then there's Cuba, who also have some players that people could use. There's some significant Cuban defectors out there right now. I got a Francisco Liriano comp on Arguelles, the left-hander who defected from the Junior National Tournament, the Junior World Tournament in Edmonton earlier this month. I got 2 Orlando Cabrera comps on the middle infielder who defected in that tournament, who I didn't get great information on previously, but I've talked to 2 scouts about him, about both these players, and I got an Orlando Cabrera comp from both of them.
Let me give a little skepticism.
And that's
here.
An 18-year-old Cuban middle infielder.
Let me give a little, not that, you know, but especially when it comes to Cuban pitchers, because
okay.
There almost seems like there's an exchange rate on it, you know, in that, like, with Cuban pitchers, when you hear them come out, you basically, you hear comps and they're,
yes.
at, you know, they're at elite level. And then basically, as a general rule, like.
No, you're right.
It's like, now, with hitters, it's not necessarily that, you know.
The big question with the Cuban pitcher for me is the younger you get them, the better. Because Levon Hernandez has probably had the most significant career of any Cuban defector. And he defected when he was 19 years old. And he was awful this year. We're not debating Levon Hernandez this year.
But he's had
a productive big league career. He got to the big leagues in 1996 and was a impact player in 1997 on a World Series championship team. You can't argue that.
Yeah.
And then El Duque also had a very significant career. Levon's had some really nice individual seasons and some brutal ones. Jose Contreras, at his peak, was a number one starter on a World Series championship team. He did that for about 3 months, and the rest of his career has been pretty up and down. But I agree with you that Cuban pitchers are overhyped, and all Cuban defectors, frankly, are overhyped. I mean, Kendry Morales is the best player Cuba probably produced in this decade, their best young talent, and he's not that good. And I think a huge part of it is Cuban players defect and they can't handle affluence. They can't handle the American lifestyle.
It's a heck of an adjustment. I mean,
it's very difficult. It's more difficult for them than it is for any Dominican player that I can think of.
No, I mean,
the situation is completely different. You're just having to handle freedom and never having had it before, and that's very difficult.
Well, so let's move on. Team USA.
I wanted to real quick on Cuba. Cuba has 3 37-year-old pitchers who could help in the big leagues right now, I'm convinced. Jorge Vera, those 5 innings against the U.S., I believe it was, or 6 innings. Those 6 innings.
Yeah.
At age 37, and shoves Dexter Fowler down early in that game, which was just ridiculous.
And then runs over like, oh, no, I wasn't trying to shove.
Absolutely.
You.
The international sign for I didn't do anything when he throws up both hands. But Jorge Vera deals. All he's ever done internationally is dealt. Adiel Palma deals.
All he ever does in international play is
deal. And then I'm going to find the quote about Pedro Luis Laza, because this guy is just unbelievable. I mean, he throws 3 innings against the U.S. and
throws 3 innings seemingly in every big game Cuba ever plays in international competition.
I mean, the guy is just you just can't make up how good he is. Laza looks like he should be on crutches or in a wheelchair. He's a huge, fat old man. I mean, he really looks like he is in bad shape. This is a scout I'm emailing from who was in Beijing. When he gets on the mound, something happens. He still has an athletic, live delivery. You expect cigars and rum, and you get 96 on the black. And that's Pedro Luis Lazo, and he's dirty. And when he wants to turn it up, he turns it to 11.
And that's the thing. That's what was so shocking about South Korea winning this.
That's right.
Is that, you know, when it comes to international play, I mean, I know, you know, that it's easy here in the U.S. to think, you know, well, we're, you know, the U.S. is the birthplace of baseball, so we're the best baseball out there. No, when it comes to international play, you know, Cuba has, and I know they've had some recent slip-ups.
But their consistency is unbelievable.
They've been in every gold medal game that there's ever been.
The last 50, I think it is, Peter Barkman, our communist friend, an American who is the... who writes? He toes the party line, so he he has unfettered access in Cuba. That's my take on it, Peter. Sorry if you don't like it, but he has unfettered access in Cuba and covers Cuba a lot from a very partisan standpoint. But Peter writes it very accurately. In the last 50 international tournaments that have mattered, Cuba's made the gold medal game of every one. They always reach the gold medal game of every top level tournament.
That even when they lost,
that's amazing consistency.
Even when they lost to South Korea in the round robin. You can very easily shrug that off because you know what? Time after time, as you talked about dialing it up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Cubans know, they knew that they were going to be in the medal round. I mean, that wasn't ever a problem. And then you just kind of expected that when it came to pressure time, they'd dial it up as they do seemingly every
time. At will. And when they can't do it, they're stunned. When they couldn't do it against Ben Sheets, they could not believe it themselves in 2000. When they couldn't do it the other day against Korea, you could see they were stunned.
If you saw them on the silver medal stand, I mean, it was like they would have rather. It looked like they would have rather left, you know, having not won a game.
The amazing thing. So to me, the amazing thing about Cuba is I'm impressed as you are by their consistency, by their amazing ability to turn it on. That said, since 2005, when they won the World Cup in the Netherlands. 06, they did not win the Olympic qualifier. 07, they did not win the World Cup. 06, they also did not win the World Baseball Classic. But they got to the finals.
That was very impressive.
It certainly was very impressive. They got a lot further than the United States. But 08, they did not win the Olympics. That is amazing. Cuba hasn't won a major international tournament in 3 years. I mean, major. They won a confederate. They won a America's tournament in 2007. I don't consider that a major event because the U.S. and Canada were not in that event. And the Dominican did not send real players either. I mean, it was like basically Cuba and a bunch of patsies. So Cuba won that event, yay. But there's been four significant events they've entered since then. Olympic qualifier, World Baseball Classic, World Cup, and the Olympics. They got four silvers. I mean, that's awesome. That's great consistency.
But
they haven't won. That's a drought.
And that is shocking in some ways. But
the
reality is
that they don't have young pitching. They don't have any. Who's going to replace Lazo, Vera, Palma, et cetera, for Cuba as the frontline rotation in international baseball in the future?
And we've talked about this. The guys who were supposed to, you can't even really – I mean, you can blame it on defections if you want.
Well, Arguelles would have been one of them. He's their number one pitcher at the World Junior Tournament.
But you also can –
which they also did not win. Korea also won the World Juniors. Great month for baseball in South Korea.
But you also can say that the guys who were supposed to, even if they hadn't – I mean, Miles Rodriguez was
– he'd be 28 years old. He's 27 years old right now.
But he's, you know, and he's 27 years old, and his last really good pitch was thrown several
2002.
Yeah. I mean, you've seen several of these guys also blow their arms out.
Yeah, Frank Monteith. Well, actually, it wasn't. Well, he blew out his back first, Miles Rodriguez. But Frank Monteith is a guy who I think in 2005 at the World Junior Tournament seemed to be emerging as this future ace for Cuba, and he has not done it. There's a left-hander, Ardolis Chapman, a left-hander who's reportedly thrown in the mid to upper 90s, but he was left off this team, and the rumors are that he was left home because there was fear he would defect.
The thing is you always have that. It's like you're putting together a team, but it's also like, but we don't want to have, you know, we don't want to lose that guy.
That's exactly, and that's the conundrum for Cuba. It'd be great if they found some more guys like Gurriel, whose dad played and kind of thought of the defect a generation ago and had that scared out of him, and now Gurriel is very loyal to the country. You wonder if maybe Cuba's economy turns around somewhat under Raul Castro. I mean, you never know what's going to happen.
You never know. Like, we've been talking about this for 20 years.
No matter how their economy turns around.
Eventually, if there is – here's the thing down the road. If there is a thaw eventually, at some point, it's hard to believe. I mean, I know it's been over 40 years now, but almost 50. Yeah. But at some point – if you actually get the point where the U.S. and Cuba, you know,
have some rapprochement.
Right. At that point, the thing about it is that then what we're also going to see is that the mystique of Cuban baseball is probably going to take a big hit because
you'll see these guys.
Right.
You won't see Alexi Bell for the first time in the Olympics and go, holy cow, that guy's like a young Kirby Puckett or a young Jimmy Wynn.
The Cuban national team, anyway. The Cuban national team will then operate the same way that the U.S. national teams do. Like even for the World Baseball Classic,
right.
Where you put together. I know that they play on different teams in for Serie Nacional,
but it's different.
But they also play together many games a year.
Correct.
Whereas
it's really amazing to me that the Dominican and Venezuela don't have that same esprit de corps that Cuba has. Because the rest of the world in Europe, like European basketball has it. Argentinian basketball has it. I mean, Manu Ginobili makes millions of dollars in the United States.
But it doesn't
so
matter.
So does Pau Gasol. And it doesn't matter. Those guys are going to go all out.
And you could say Yao Ming in China. Yao Ming will play.
Right.
Yao Ming will basically drag a stress fracture
right.
to the Olympics. You know.
And that's the thing. I'm just surprised that doesn't carry over in baseball for the Dominican or for Venezuela. The Dominican played very well in the World Baseball Classic. Venezuela didn't. Venezuela was a huge disappointment in that tournament. I don't know enough about Venezuelan or Dominican culture. We're 35 minutes into the Baseball America podcast. We've barely talked about Team USA. Let's give Team USA 5 good minutes here, JJ. I think my quick take, kudos to the USA players for it was a difficult tournament for them. They really didn't have a whole lot go right for them.
No, they had a lot go wrong.
And they still win the bronze medal. They lost Jason Nix for several games. They lost Matt Laporta for several games to injuries.
I mean, Jason Nix, they basically lost for almost the entire – I know he came back for the final game, you know, which was good to see him get back out there.
Laporta also came back for the final game from his concussion.
But in Nix's case, I mean, he missed most, all the tournament.
I think the things that I focus on for the U.S. are the selection process. I don't know if they realize how left-handed their team was. And they right-handed, I mean, their team was. And they really probably needed a better left-handed hitter or two because they looked helpless against Jorge Vera and Pedro Lazo in the game that mattered. You had to know you were going to play Cuba, and Cuba's best pitchers, with the exception of Adiel Palma, are all left-handed. I mean, are all right-handed. And the U.S. was not prepared with Nate Shearholz, basically, and then switch hitters like Terry Tiffey and Dexter Fowler. Nate Shearholz was their only legitimate left-handed bat. And I know they lost Colby Rasmus, right before the event, but there were no other left-handed hitters. And maybe they were going to get Danny Murphy of the Mets to play third base instead of Mike Hessman. It would have been – maybe you sacrifice the defense and you take Matt Gamble. Matt Gamble's bat, left-handed bat, would have looked awfully good in the U.S. lineup. Maybe the Brewers didn't let them have Matt Gamble, but there had to be some left-handed hitters they could have gotten to make this – to balance this lineup out a little bit. I think they really missed that. Or you take a left-handed 4A hitter instead of a guy like a John Gall or, again, Mike Hessman, who was a swing-and-miss machine in the Olympics.
Yeah.
So I think the selection process, Team USA didn't hit enough. And the biggest reason for that was they weren't balanced enough. They didn't have enough left-handed bats. There's A. I'm being nitpicky. B, I thought Davey Johnson's management of their bullpen, and that's been a specialty of his in the big leagues in his career, I thought it was pretty poor. I thought that he divided up his bullpen into one day's closers and set up man on the next days, and he should have mixed and matched, it's easy to say in hindsight, his young guys with his older guys, but the Jeff Stevens-Blaine Neal tandem was awful, and the Casey Weathers-Kevin Jepsen tandem was really good. And I don't know they would have scored two runs in the ninth to tie Cuba.
But it took it out of the...
But they gave up six runs in the eighth inning with Stevens and Neal each giving up three-run home runs. Stevens had two of their three losses. Neal's ERA was 760, and that's not counting bases loaded, no outs, rain out against the Netherlands. Jeff Stevens and Blaine Neal were awful, and they're really the only pitchers on the U.S. team who were awful. Brandon Knight had one bad start, one pretty good start. Brett Anderson was okay in one start. Well, got knocked around a little bit in one start, and the second start got knocked around early and then finished really
down strong
in the bronze medal game. But in general, the U.S. pitched better than it hit. I guess Matt Brown was really their offensive most consistent offensive force, him and Jason Donald. Jason Donald hit .385. Brown had two homers and 10 RBIs, both highs on the team. Laporte also had two home
Fowler,
runs.
Dexter Fowler, after a slow start, was really good.
He was 1-for-14 at one point, and then he did finish strong. But, I mean, David Johnson didn't even play him the first game. He had Nate Shearholz play center field, and it's just disappointing that the United States continues to, to me, the disappointing part is you're going to use minor league players. You might want to use minor leaguers to manage those players. You might want to use who are familiar with minor league players. It seemed like, even though David Johnson knew he was going to manage this team 3 years ago and has managed every international team since 2005 for the U.S., he didn't seem to know his talent until later on in the tournament as he got more comfortable with it. That seems odd. I don't understand why you would play Nate Shearholz in center field. It doesn't make sense. I don't understand how, if you know the international game, that you wouldn't have predicted that against a lot of breaking balls, that Mike Hesman would struggle. I thought that was a risky choice.
Say, yeah, but that was something that we were saying before they ever headed on the plane. It's like, you know,
Mike Hesman's either going to hit like 5 home runs and dominate this tournament, or he's going to strike out every other bat. And it turned out to be that he struck out every other
and
bat.
He actually literally did. He struck out,
11 times in 22 plate appearances, I believe is what it was. Yeah. I mean, it was good to have him there because he can play shortstop in a pinch. I mean, you lost Nix, but you had to rely on Mike Hesman, and that just did not work out.
And let me say also, in Davey Johnson's defense in some ways, one thing that's bad for him compared to most of these other teams here is it's like Cuba goes into this, and the Cuban manager goes into this tournament basically knowing whatever he has to do to win, that's all he has to do.
Yeah.
Like, if Pedro Lazo throws 4 innings one day and then throws 5 the next, if he can be effective doing it, you're not going to get any complaints as long as you come home with the gold.
But, the U.S. did have enough pitching depth. But, I don't think that was an issue.
No, but hold on, that's what I'm saying, though. But part of the reason they got hamstrung is they carried on a 23-man roster 12 pitchers.
Right.
So what it meant was is when they did have the injuries, when they did have Jason Nix and Matt LaPorta go down.
Right.
There's no – when it came to the lineup, you can do is move guys up and down in the batting order. But you've got 2 catchers. That's the only backups you have.
Right.
The only backup you have is 1 catcher. So you can't pinch run. You can't pinch hit. You can't say, well, this Hesman's struggling, so I'm going to bench him for today.
Right.
None of that was an option. And
that's
correct. Was because I don't think that if you asked Team USA if they'd had their choice, that they'd have carried 12 pitchers, but they knew they had to because it was something where, well, we can't throw this guy more than 75 pitches. We can't
clearly mandated, yeah.
Yeah. We can't throw any of these guys back-to-back days, all that.
Well, the one guy who wasn't on a pitch count is Steven Strasburg, and he's the one that he was the most careful with. I think, to
Jimmy
Johnson's
that.
Credit. Absolutely. And I mean, his credit. He threw 75 pitches, and that was all he allowed him to go in the gold medal game. What did you think about the decision to start Strasburg in the first place? Clearly has the best arm on Team USA, but this guy is 20 years old. Is his stuff that much better? Jake Arrieta is the one guy who didn't. He only made 1 start. He could have gone also, I guess, with he could have staffed it or gone with Brett Anderson in that game as opposed – with the left-hander as opposed to Strasburg. What did you think of starting Strasburg?
I liked it. We've talked about in the past that, if you say what's the best way to attack Cuba, it's never been to throw a guy out there who's savvy, can't out-savvy Cuba.
Well, that's the thing, though. Actually, teams have. Teams have always tried to throw thumbing lefties. That's always been the book on Cuba is the thumbing left-hander, and that's why the U.S. threw Rick Krivda at them in the first-round robin game in Sydney, and then John Rao shoved it against them for 4 innings out of the bullpen. And they were like, okay, wait a minute, maybe we'll just go with the power guys. But they were going to go with Ben Sheets anyway.
Right, but
and
I'm saying, but
and in 2006, in the world, and well, 2006, it was Kevin Slowey who started the game, and in 2007, it was Brian Dunsing. So I think the key here is to start a twin. They didn't have a twin, and I'm going to blame them for not having a twin. They should have had Anthony Swarzak or Tyler Robertson, who I guess is hurt. Kyle Waldrop's hurt. They had Brian Dunsing.
Yeah.
And Brian Dunsing pitched well in relief in this game. I guess that's what I'm actually wondering is, to me, I think I might have gone with a veteran or an older guy to start, and I would have had Strasburg as my trump card later.
Well,
that's the only quibble I'd have. But again, I'm nitpicking.
Right,
really
I was surprised. I thought I could have seen Strasburg going out there and just, basically shoving it on him for 7 innings. He didn't.
Right.
What happened was, and you saw, I think this is going to be actually, I think I talked to you about this, that this will actually be good for Steven Strasburg long term.
It could be, absolutely.
Because
I agree with your point.
In college baseball, he has no need for a third pitch.
Correct.
I mean, you throw a changeup against a college lineup, you are doing them a favor.
It's really a similar problem to Mark Pryor. That's exactly the same problem Mark Pryor had in college.
That being said, what he saw against Cuba is that,
use a third pitch.
Before I make it to the big leagues, because what happened, the reason he was at 75 pitches wasn't that he wasn't around the zone. It wasn't that, his stuff wasn't filthy. What it was, though, is that without that third pitch, Cuba's approach was, if you throw us a fastball and we can't, we can't do something with it, we'll foul it off, do it again.
They were able to spoil quite a bit.
And so basically what they did is they worked his pitch count up really quickly because he didn't have that changeup to give them something else to have in the back of the head. Everything was going to come hard, and they knew it.
Yep, and they were able to gear up for it, and you have to give Cuba's hitters, I think, a lot of that credit. for spoiling things for Steven Strasburg. It's been a long podcast. We knew it was coming. JJ and I have been looking forward to this for a couple weeks, basically, for the post-Olympic podcast. But I do think, ultimately, I think you have to give David Johnson and his players a lot of credit. Like I said, there are ways you can nitpick it, for sure. But they had a lot of adversity. They had the beanball stuff with China, basically. You had David Johnson's kind of ridiculous arguments against Cuba, saying that Lazo threw at Jason Nix when the ball just like was an inside pitch.
That
hit the bat and hit him in the face. But they had a lot of bad breaks. They didn't make things easy on themselves at all. And yet, when they really needed to, they gathered themselves and beat Japan to win the bronze medal. I think that's really an outstanding accomplishment for this team. They went 6-3.
You would like to see them be more competitive against Cuba.
In the semifinal. That's really it. And the thing is, they were down 4-2 in the eighth. Like,
right.
You watched that entire game start to finish. I've watched parts of it. Cuba dominated the game from start to finish. You would have liked to have seen them had more of a chance. Yeah, they were still in the game.
They were still in the game. It was 4-2. They were still in the game. That being said,
they
U.S. had
no
one extra base hit in the entire game.
And it came in the ninth, and they were down 10-2.
Right.
And they had no business winning that game, and Cuba deserved to win it. Cuba was the better team. So I think, honestly, what happened in the Olympics is the best team finished first, the second best team finished second, and the third best team really finished third. And if you're Japan, you got to wonder what the heck is going on here. No medal in 2000 with big leaguers, a bronze medal in 2004 with big leaguers, and no medal in 2008 with big leaguers. Thank goodness for Japan's baseball identity and baseball pride that they won the World Baseball Classic in 2006, because really internationally they have no claim to dominance or being a baseball power. A consistent baseball power. They have one medal in the last three Olympics.
Right.
Even the U.S. has two, and the U.S. wasn't even in one of those Olympics.
Right. And that's the thing. Is the
and
World
Korea
Baseball
has two, and Korea wasn't in 2004 either.
But the World Baseball Classic does give them
no doubt
a lot of credibility.
It's a pretty good fig leaf.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one because that's, you know.
That's the one where Ichiro played, and he didn't play in any of the other ones. Daisuke played in 2000 and 2004 and 2006. And has the World Baseball Classic gold medal to show for it and the bronze in 2004. But Ichiro is the difference. I think that actually is another – if you're in Japan, I think that fact burnishes Ichiro's legend even more over all these pitchers or whatever. Ichiro kind of stands alone as the guy who has the best big league career of any Japanese player and was the leader of the World Baseball Classic gold medal championship team. It's a little – tidbit for me when I think it just even more sets Ichiro apart from his countrymen, whether it's Hideki Matsui or Kenji Jojima or anybody else who's coming to the United States. He's here and everybody else is down here.
And
I know
we will give an homage to Sadaharu Oh, who is, you know,
who was the manager also 2006.
But, you know, who burnished his legacy, you know, which I mean.
Absolutely.
It's almost
best
like
player in Japan and the manager who had success internationally.
It's like if Babe Ruth had actually gotten that managerial job and then become one of the best managers in.
Well, international baseball moves on to next year's World Baseball Classic. That could be interesting.
I am excited about that because that is truly – I mean, we may have problems with, you know, who's going to commit to playing
right.
And all that. But you are talking about the best of the best playing each other.
And I think it's going to be fascinating to see if baseball – that World Baseball Classic, now the Olympics are out, and that it is clearly the ultimate in baseball internationally, how MLB plays that out and whether it expands the World Baseball Classic to include more clubs – whether or not Greece gets an invite for the future so he can have George Kontos take the mound and Nick Markakis take the mound and Mike Moustakas take the mound for the Greek team. I'm the only one who seems to care about that. Not even Mike Moustakas and Nick Markakis seem to care about that. But this will be probably the last international baseball podcast we have for a very long time. For JJ Cooper, I'm John Manuel. I promise that next week we will return to your emails at podcast@baseballamerica.com, but we clearly had a lot to say this week. Thanks so much for the download, and until the next podcast, so long, everybody.
Wow.